Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Sputnik Radio. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. In Thailand, as anti-government protests continue, police may charge the leaders with the crime of insulting the monarchy. Tokyo will ban the sale of gasoline autos by 2030. Japan's greenhouse gas emissions were down slightly before the pandemic, but the environmental minister says that the goal of carbon neutrality by 2050 will require many more changes. The United Nations Environmental Program is telling nations to embrace green policies as the new norm, since the current reductions will not reach the Paris Agreement goals. Japan is implementing tax reforms to get businesses to be more environmentally friendly. Farmers in India are having a nationwide protest over new agricultural marketing reforms. NHK Japan.
Authorities in Thailand are increasing pressure on anti-government protesters who continue to call for the reform of the monarchy. 4 key protest leaders, including university students, have been questioned for allegedly insulting the monarchy. Police summoned the leaders on Tuesday regarding allegations they violated the Lèse Majesté law at an assembly in September. The law forbids insulting or defaming the monarchy. Before being interrogated, one of the leaders said such charges will only fuel public anger.
The only impact the law will have is that more and more people will go out and demonstrate as monarchy becomes an enemy of the people.
Police spoke with the leaders for about 2 hours before releasing them. Some were also questioned last week on separate Lèse Majesté allegations. Now, violators of the law against insulting the royal family can face up to 15 years in prison. But the law has not been applied for several years. The demonstrators say the interrogations infringe on their freedom of expression and are an attempt to suppress the people through fear. They're calling for large-scale demonstrations on Thursday.
Tokyo's governor says the Japanese capital will ban the sale of new gasoline-powered cars by 2030 in favor of hybrid or electric vehicles. Governor Koike Yuriko announced the ambitious goal on Tuesday as part of the megacity's efforts to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050.
Major cities must take the lead in promoting global efforts to cut greenhouse gas emissions to zero.
She said Tokyo plans to end sales of new gasoline vehicles by 2030 and gasoline motorcycles by 2035. Koike added, it will lead the global trend by becoming 100% non-gasoline. The goal is for all new vehicles sold in Tokyo to be electric-powered, including fuel cell and hybrid cars. The capital's new target puts it 5 years ahead of a national plan.
Japan's greenhouse gas emissions for the year through March hit a record low. But the Environment Ministry is also calling for a much stronger push to make the country carbon neutral. Preliminary figures show emissions in fiscal 2019 amounted to about 1.2 billion tons of carbon dioxide, down nearly 3% from the previous year and the 6th straight annual decline. Officials say the output of the nation's steel and machinery makers fell, leading to a drop in energy consumption. They also point to an increase in the use of renewables, such as solar power and geothermal energy. But the environment minister says that's far from enough to realize the government's target of making Japan carbon neutral by the year 2050.
We should not be optimistic about the results. We have to continue our efforts to reduce emissions.
Officials say the goal can only be achieved with technological innovations and major changes to people's lifestyles. The United Nations Environment Program has given a timely warning for nations making post-pandemic recovery plans. It's telling them to embrace green policies as the new norm or risk the wrath of Mother Nature. UNEP officials say in a report on Wednesday, now is the time to act on dips in emissions to make permanent changes. The pandemic limited traveling, industrial activity, and power generation, with carbon dioxide emissions dropping up to 7% as a result. But the report says it'll have virtually no impact on the Paris Agreement goals of limiting global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Disappointing news for people hoping for a silver lining to the pandemic's forced pause. In fact, the report says it'll only translate to a decimal level of reduction by 2050, and the world is still on track towards a 3.2-degree increase this century. In an interview with NHK World, UNEP's executive director pointed to the unprecedented fires and floods parts of the world experienced this year.
The window is closing, and soon we will have to conclude that the world will be fundamentally altered, unless, and this is the thing, unless we heed this action.
The agency goes on to say recent pledges of net zero emissions by world leaders are welcome. That includes the Japanese government's promise to become emission-free by 2050. But it said commitments must be backed with rapid action, and there's an inconsistency between current emissions levels and the ambitious goals. Some of UNEP's suggested measures included incentives for cycling and car sharing, support for rail over air travel, policies to reduce food waste, and large-scale reforestation. The report also called out the world's elite, saying the richest 1% needs to reduce their footprint, as they're responsible for more than twice the poorest 50%. Lawmakers from Japan's ruling parties have backed a number of tax reforms designed to kickstart the economy and get businesses to become more environmentally friendly. They say the measures can offset the fallout from the coronavirus pandemic and help Japan hit its long-term goal of carbon neutrality. The Liberal Democratic Party and its coalition partner, Komeito, have adopted the package for fiscal 2021, starting in April. It includes a freeze on tax hikes for land, including residential and commercial plots. It also extends tax breaks for eco-friendly vehicles by 2 years. The measure was set to end in April. The package includes a range of incentives for firms to work toward targets set by the administration of Prime Minister Suga Yoshihide. Firms will be rewarded for embracing innovative and eco-friendly technology in their production lines. The government plans to submit a bill incorporating the package to the Diet next year. Farmers in India have called a nationwide protest amid their standoff with the government over new agricultural marketing reforms. Thousands of farmers on Tuesday obstructed roads and railways. Protesters completely blocked entry to New Delhi as a way to pressure the central government. The tension began in September when Parliament enacted new rules allowing farmers to sell their produce outside marketplaces controlled by authorities. Farmers are concerned the reforms will bring down prices and reduce their incomes. But Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government insists the reforms will only enhance their income and said propaganda is being spread in an attempt to divide society. The protest follows several rounds of talks between the farmers and the Indian government that have failed to produce a breakthrough.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. In Peru, farm workers used protest to force the government to repeal a new agricultural export law. A new study from Brown University in Britain shows that the number of civilians killed in Afghanistan by U.S.-led airstrikes increased 330% between 2016 and 2019. The United Nations Human Rights Commission has called for an investigation of lethal force used by Israeli troops against Palestinian children. Then a viewpoint on the Venezuelan legislative election, which supported President Maduro's party, only to be called a sham by the United States and other colonialists. A second Iranian fleet of tankers is en route to Venezuela, despite U.S. sanctions. Radio Havana, Cuba.
In Peru, lawmakers have repealed a highly contested agricultural law. This follows 5 days of demonstrations and roadblocks led by farm workers across the country. At least one person was killed on Thursday when police opened fire on protesters. Over the weekend, Peru's newly appointed interim president, Alejandro Sagasti, sent a bill to Congress revoking the law, which sought to increase agricultural exports and give exporters tax breaks. Farm workers said it benefited corporations while slashing their wages and worsening working conditions. A new study has found that the number of civilians killed in U.S.-led airstrikes across Afghanistan climbed by nearly 330% between 2016 and 2019, and that 1,357 civilians perished in such strikes in the 2015-19 period. According to a research study conducted as part of the Costs of War project by Britain's Brown University, quote, the total number of civilians killed by international and Afghan Air Force airstrikes has increased. International military forces led by the U.S. are responsible for the majority of those killed by airstrikes from 2015 through 2019, 1,357 killed by international forces compared to 461 killed by the Afghan Air Force, the AAF. The number of civilians killed by international airstrikes increased by about 330% from 2016, the last full year of the Obama administration, to 2019, the most recent year for which there is complete data from the United Nations. The researchers who conducted the study also said the climbing number of civilian deaths were the outcome of U.S. President Donald Trump's administration's decision to relax its rules of engagement for airstrikes across Afghanistan in 2017. In 2019, the study added international airstrikes killed 700 civilians in Afghanistan, which marked the largest figure compared to any other year since the U.S.-led military invasion of the country began in 2001. Israeli forces have had a long history of using tear gas, stun grenades, rubber-coated bullets, and live ammunition against demonstrators, including children. Today, the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights has called for a transparent investigation into the use of lethal force by Israeli troops, especially against Palestinian children. A statement issued at the United Nations says the UN Human Rights Office calls on Israel to promptly, transparently, and independently investigate all instances of the Israeli army's use of force that has led to killing or injury and to hold those responsible accountable. The UN body also warned Israeli forces against using disproportionate force and live ammunition against Palestinian children across the occupied lands. Quote, in accordance with international law, the use of lethal force is only allowed as a measure of last resort in response to a threat to life or of serious injury. Mourners gathered over the weekend for the funeral of Ali Abu Alia, a Palestinian teenager who was killed by Israeli forces Friday. Israeli soldiers shot the teen in the stomach during a protest in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian officials called the act a war crime. The European Union delegation to the Palestinians called for a full investigation, tweeting, "Children should enjoy special protection under international law. How many more Palestinian children will be subject to the excessive use of lethal force by Israeli security forces?"
The great patriotic poll of Venezuela won a major and unquestionable victory in Sunday's legislative elections in that country, albeit there are right-wing forces and governments aligned with the United States that refuse to recognize those results. It's not at all surprising that Donald Trump's administration, through Mike Pompeo's voice, insisted on defining the event as a sham and asked his lackeys to join Washington in this sense. Actually, they haven't even acknowledged their defeat in the battle for re-election and are making their country a laughingstock, clinging to the White House with all their might to keep out the virtual president-elect, Joe Biden. However, Washington's intentions to take over Venezuela is not a mere whim of Trump, but rather a strategic matter, since there are the main crude oil reserves on the planet, in addition to raw materials and other natural resources, including water, something that is increasingly coveted. That's why they're willing to move all their pawns, with or without the real estate tycoon in power, because taking over Venezuelan oil is, for the empire, a matter of life and death. Nevertheless, it's a shame to see the poor role played by the European Union, which either still hasn't learned that the colony is over and there are free and sovereign nations in America, or it also wants a share of its spoils. It fell on deaf ears the call made by former Spanish President José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero to that continental organization, inviting it to reflect on what's going to happen in Venezuela after January the 5th, when the new National Assembly takes office. The politician considers that blockade measures and sanctions are not the way, but dialogue and cooperation. There's another group of countries that refuse to accept the results of the ballots in Venezuela, which are basically the same ones that bend their knees to recognize Guaido by imposition of Washington. Some of them are pathetic, but others just make us laugh. Such is the case of Guatemala, that owns one of the most corrupt and discredited legislative bodies in the continent. In addition, its citizens have been in the streets for several weeks demanding the resignation of the deputies and the president of the republic. In Venezuela, the people decided, and no one has the right to question what happened there, a process that was endorsed by observers from many countries and non-governmental organizations. But, well, recalling the saying, the worst blind person is the one who refuses to see.
An Iranian fleet of tankers is reportedly en route to Venezuela, carrying fuel for the South American oil-producing country, which is suffering from a severe gasoline shortage. Citing unnamed trusted informants, Bloomberg reported that some of the flotilla of 10 Iranian vessels will also export Venezuelan crude after discharging the fuel. The shipment comes in defiance of illegal U.S. sanctions targeting both Tehran and Caracas. The U.S. has imposed sanctions on state oil company Petróleos de Venezuela, the PDVSA, as part of its design to oust President Nicolas Maduro by creating a crippling gasoline shortage in the once prosperous OPEC nation. In May, Iran sent five tankers loaded with 1.53 million barrels of gasoline and alkylate to Venezuela to help jumpstart oil refineries in the Latin American country. The fleet surprised international observers as it crossed the Caribbean Sea, patrolled by the U.S. Navy, to be greeted by Maduro himself upon arrival. Now, the last Iranian fuel shipments, which were sent in early October on three vessels, are running out, threatening nationwide shortages. The current Venezuela-bound Iranian fleet is double the size of the one sent in May.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. Next, Sputnik Radio. Afshin Ratansi spoke with Jorge Araya, the foreign minister of Venezuela, in May about the first Iranian delivery and the Monroe Doctrine. Sputnik Radio.
Do you think that the fact that Iranian ships have been able to come to Venezuela has broken U.S. hegemony in your hemisphere? Is this a very important moment in world history?
Yes, it is. You know that President Trump has stated that the Monroe Doctrine, which dates from 1823, is right in force at the moment, and that they own this part of the world, and that they will not admit, they will not authorize other countries to invest in Latin America like China, Russia, or to have any kind of business with Latin America, especially not with Venezuela, with Cuba. But they have not been able to, because they don't have the power to do so. If there is a people that has their own model, their own process, and that are independent and that have dignity, we will be able to prevail. And they have tried to oust President Maduro, at least for the last 2 years, with a very clear agenda. They have tried to impose another government, a fake government. They have done these operations with mercenaries. They have blocked the Venezuelan economy, and they will not achieve their goals. So it is by all means a proof that we are prevailing, that the Monroe Doctrine is not an automatic decision of President Trump, that they would have to kill millions in order to get control of our country, and what the relations that we have with Russia, with China, with Iran and other nations are also a proof that we do what we consider is good for our people, not what Washington considers is good for them.
That excerpt of an interview was by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I'm grateful for donations from listeners in Fort Bragg, Little Lake, Annapolis, and Modesto, California. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. A series of news briefs on a mystery illness in India, plastic bottles, Australian fires, and Lebanese hail. Then global COVID reports, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel spoke with passion about tougher restrictions to limit the rapidly spreading COVID and the anti-science protest against lockdowns. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Officials in India are seeking the cause of a mystery illness that struck down more than 300 children and 100 adults. In the state of Andhra Pradesh, doctors have found traces of lead and nickel in blood samples of those sick. Now authorities have ordered an inquiry into the source of the metals and how they got into the bodies of hundreds of people. Coca-Cola, Pepsi and Nestle have been named the world's top plastic polluters for a third year in a row. All three companies have been accused of making zero progress on reducing plastic waste. Coca-Cola announced earlier this year it would not abandon plastic bottles, saying they were popular with customers.
In Australia, residents have been told to evacuate from Fraser Island as bushfires burn towards homes. More than half of the World Heritage National Park has been destroyed by fires in recent weeks, with a heat wave worsening conditions. It is thought that an illegal campfire sparked the blaze. Lebanon's capital, Beirut, has been hit by a hailstorm for the first time in more than 50 years. The intense downpour led to flooding in some areas. The hail took many residents by surprise and comes just months after a massive explosion at Beirut port left some 300,000 people homeless. The Serum Institute of India says it has applied for emergency use authorization of its coronavirus vaccine in India. Britain says it will administer the first doses of the BioNTech-Pfizer vaccine on Tuesday. Healthcare workers and seniors will be first in line. And COVID-19 infections in Germany are still trending upward, despite the partial lockdown imposed in early November. Health departments reported more than 12,000 new infections, about 1,000 more than on Monday last week. Meanwhile, in the German state of Bavaria, new coronavirus infections remain among the highest in the country. After a crisis meeting on Sunday, the regional government has decided to toughen restrictions. Starting Wednesday, Bavarians will be asked to stay at home, with only a few exceptions.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned rich countries against prioritizing their domestic vaccine needs at the expense of others. He's appealed for $4.2 billion to help get vaccines to the world's poorest people. Canada has become the third nation to approve the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine. The country plans to begin administering the shots next week. Australian scientists say they've developed a rapid genome sequencing method that would help to rapidly contain future outbreaks. They say it would cut the time taken to trace the source of cases from 24 hours to within 4 hours.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel is known for being calm under pressure, a crisis manager. But today, Merkel showed another side of her we rarely get to see when she made an impassioned plea for tougher restrictions to bring down the country's high coronavirus numbers. Well, Germany's death toll from COVID-19 has now hit a record daily high of 590. That's more than 20,000 new infections. Addressing the German parliament earlier, Merkel revealed the depth of her concern for the nation.
Angela Merkel has spoken in parliament on countless occasions, but this time was different. She framed the decisions now facing Germany as a matter of life and death in one of the most impassioned speeches of her life.
There are 14 days to go until Christmas. 14 days. We have to give our all to ensure that we don't end up back in exponential growth. If we have too much contact with others before Christmas and then it turns out to be the very last Christmas with our grandparents, then this will be a terrible failure.
Merkel's message, it's time to act. Shops are still open and even some traditional Christmas stands are serving mulled wine out on the streets. Merkel says this has to change.
As hard as this is, I know how much love gets poured into those Christmas stands. And I'm sorry from the bottom of my heart, but if we have to pay the price of 590 people dying every day, that's just not acceptable in my eyes. And we must take action.
Merkel also condemned the protest movements casting doubt on the science behind the so-called lockdown light currently in place. She made an unusually personal reference to her background as a scientist and her earlier years living under a regime with no respect for the truth.
At university in East Germany, I decided to study physics. I probably would not have done that if I had lived in the West. I did it because I realized that many things could be undermined, but not gravity or the speed of light or other scientific facts.
For Merkel, the facts are clear. A tighter lockdown is needed right now. Her next challenge is to persuade not only Parliament, but also the German people and the all-important leaders of each German state. Without their consent, tougher actions won't be possible. But if today's speech is anything to go by, Merkel is ready to put all her political power on the line.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.